What I'd like to do today is to do something a little bit different. I want to do an extended sermonette. I had an email, and if I can just read a section from it. If I just read one of the paragraphs, it says, it's not that I want the rest of the world condemned to suffering, it's just that I've been taught that healing was for the church in this age and that the world is cut off from God except to those whom he's calling. And there is a lot in that. Certainly healing is for the church. Certainly Christ was beaten for the church. And we go to him in faith and we ask for that healing. But I'm just thinking about prayers. Really, what I need to ask is that: does God ever hear the prayers of those outside the church? Does he actually hear prayers outside the church? And if so, then how can our prayers be special? I'm thinking particularly of a quotation that Mr. Armstrong, or reference that Mr. Armstrong used regarding Joseph Muller, and how Joseph Muller prayed for bread and bread came. And he prayed for this, and you know, whatever it was that he came, and his was a work of faith. There's no question of that. And how can somebody who is out in the world, because Joseph Muller, to the best of our knowledge, has never been called, was never called, but how can somebody like that have their prayers answered, when sometimes it appears that our prayers aren't answered? And I think it's worth looking into this subject. I think that an extended sermonette of about half an hour should be able to cover the high spots of it. And I've broken it down into three basic points. First of all, I want to go and examine places where God does indeed listen to the unconverted prayers. People who were unconverted, who nevertheless were actually entreated by God. We actually find cases of that in Scripture. So it's worth actually going and having a look at that. Secondly, I want to talk about how faith... it appears that faith seems to play a very large part in such prayers being answered. And I think this really is largely the area that we can look at and say that God's put almost like a living law into place, that if people apply that law, they will be answered. They will have their prayers answered. And thirdly, I want to talk about the difference in our own dealings with God. In other words, what is this difference that God places on the ones that he's called? And I think that there are people, in fact there are ministers out there, who literally do not understand this. Certainly Mr. Armstrong gave that impression when he gave the sermon on why the first fruits. If you go back and listen to that sermon, he was almost apoplectic about his about the fact that we're going to be teachers. And he was saying that ministers are giving sermons and sermonettes who literally do not understand this. And to this day, we have quotes from ministers that don't understand the difference. So we need to look at the difference in our own dealings with God. So those are the three points I want to cover in this extended sermonette, prior to listening to the main message today from Mr. Armstrong. So first of all, let's have a look at some places where God actually does listen to the unconverted. Let's turn over to 1 Kings, in 1 Kings chapter 8. 1 Kings chapter 8. I want you to notice here just what Solomon prayed regarding the dedication of the temple. In 1 Kings chapter 8, and here... let's have a look, where does it actually begin in that section? Then spoke Solomon, verse 12, the Eternal said that he would dwell in thick darkness, and I've shown built you a house to dwell in, and settled place for you to abide forever. Now Solomon was not converted to the best of our understanding. He certainly did not follow God fully as David did. There are scriptures that actually in that regard. But if over in verse 30 it says, and listen to the supplication of your servant and of your people Israel when they shall pray toward this place, and hear in heaven your dwelling place, and when you hear, forgive. And if any man trespass against his neighbor, and an oath be laid upon him to cause him to swear, and the oath come before your altar in this house, then hear in heaven and do and judge your servant, condemning the wicked, and so on. So it was a case that the very temple worship, Solomon was asking that, in fact, when people prayed towards the temple, when they recognized where God was working, that in fact they would be heard. And we find instances of that. If you want to put in your notes, I'm not going to actually turn to them, but if you put in your notes 2 Kings 13 verse 4, you'll find Jehoahaz, who prayed to God, and God heard. It actually says it within the verse, 2 Kings 13 verse 4. Another one, which is a classic one, is 2 Chronicles 30 verse 20. 2 Chronicles 30 verse 20. To the best of our understanding, Hezekiah was not converted. But nevertheless, he prayed and his prayer was answered. His prayer was answered. And God heard that prayer. So here is an unconverted person, certainly in the case of Jehoahaz, an unconverted person praying to God in the correct way, in a certain way, and actually being listened to. If we turn over to Luke chapter 18, in Luke chapter 18, we find in Luke 18 an example that Christ actually gives. In Luke 18, he gives this parable over in verse 9. It says, "And he spoke this parable to certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others." He said, "Two men went into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank you that I am not as other men, or extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this publican. I fast twice in the week, I give tithes of all that I possess.'" And notice it was thus with himself. He was praying to himself. He wasn't actually getting through at all. So his prayers were not being answered. But he said, "The publican, standing afar off, wouldn't even lift so much as his eyes to heaven, but smote on his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' I tell you that this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalts himself will be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted." So the implication is that God, in fact, heard that prayer. A certain type of prayer gets through, and a certain type of prayer doesn't. And both were not converted. Both were not part of the true church as such. He was talking about an instance there at that particular time. And it's interesting, I mean, you can put in your notes Acts 17, where Paul talks to the philosophers on Mars Hill. He talks about God not being far from each and every one of us. And these were pagan philosophers. Now, God isn't very far. I mean, his spirit, it says, fills heaven and earth. And so the idea that God doesn't know, when he actually can tell when a sparrow falls to the ground, or tell each and every hair on our heads. I mean, he's far more concerned about human beings than he is sparrows. And that includes human beings out in the world. It doesn't mean to say that every prayer is answered. It certainly isn't, as it gives the example here. The Pharisee, his prayer wasn't, he prayed within himself. It certainly wasn't answered. But it is clear that God does listen to the unconverted. Another one you can put into your notes is 1 Samuel 1:17. Hannah. As far as we are aware, Hannah wasn't converted, but she prayed and she got an answer. And she conceived, and from Hannah came Samuel. Now, one of the big things, however, we'll go on to the second point, one of the big areas that we need to be aware of is that faith plays a huge part when God does answer prayer. It plays a huge part in our own lives as well, but as we'll go on and we'll find out that in fact God is working with us in a way he's not working with the world. That's the only difference between us. But in the case of, I say the only difference between us, we have the Holy Spirit within us. That's the real difference between us. But faith certainly does play a huge part. If we turn over to Mark chapter 11, in Mark chapter 11, now he's addressing to his disciples, admittedly, and these are the people who are in fact going to be converted. But he says in verse 24, it says, "Therefore I say to you, whatever you desire when you pray, believe that you will receive them, and you shall have them. And when you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against any, And it goes into this section. There's a, I was thinking of another section actually in Matthew 5 where it talks about, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Now, these are pretty unconditional promises. But this particular one does say that whatever you desire, when you pray, believe, that is, have the faith, and you'll have what your petition is. Now that is a principle. And we see instances in real life. The one that Mr. Armstrong highlighted was Joseph Muller, who, as a somebody outside, nothing to do with the church whatsoever, as far as I know, he was a Sunday keeper, who believed God, who saw what God had said about, ask and you'll receive, seek and you'll find, ask and you'll receive. And he held God to his word. He basically got on his knees and he asked, expecting that it would in fact be answered. So it was the case that he was asking for bread, and he got bread. I mean, again, he was looking at the scriptures that talk about if any child of you ask for bread, who's going to give him a stone? And he saw those scriptures, and he had the faith in those scriptures, and he therefore asked, and his prayers were answered. Mr. Armstrong certainly brings this out. Another book that I read some years ago was The Hiding Place by Corrie ten Boom. Now, this woman was quite phenomenal. She was, in fact, hiding, or her family was hiding Jews in the Second World War. And certainly, in Ravensbrück, it wasn't so much her, it wasn't so much Corrie ten Boom, it was more her sister Betsy. But they prayed, and they got answers. Now, it's not... there's no indication whatsoever that these people were converted in any way at all. But nevertheless, I mean, the answers that they got were quite miraculous. There was a case that they had this this bottle of vitamin drops that they were administering, just basically trying to keep themselves alive. And they started sharing it with the rest of the inmates. And there were hundreds of inmates. There was a little bottle of vitamin drops. And these vitamin drops just kept on going. And they kept going until they got an alternative supply, which was Marmite or something, that gave them an alternative supply of vitamins. But there's no way that this little bottle, they couldn't see how much was in this bottle, it just kept on doling out vitamin drops. And there is certainly this instance of faith. It almost seems to be that God has placed this within creation. It's something to do with the very way that our mind works and the way it is such an important point that when we have faith, things do happen. We can see it quite clearly over in Mark chapter 5. In Mark chapter 5, here is a case, and again, this woman is not converted. Mark chapter 5, verse 25. It says, "A certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I may touch but his clothes, I will be whole.'" Now there was her faith. Her faith was quite simple. It was a very simple faith, that she reckoned that if she could just touch his garments, then this problem would clear up. "And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt it in her body, that she was healed of the plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned to him about in the press, and said, 'Who touched my clothes?' And his disciples said to him, 'You see the multitude thronging you, and you saying, "Who's touching me?"'" I mean, he was just being jostled from every side, and yet he could sense that somebody had touched him in a sense that, as he said, virtue went out of him. How exactly that felt, who knows? But he knew that. I mean, he created the human body. He created the very forces of he understood the faith of Christ that does the healing. And it was the faith of him that was going out of him, actually performing that healing, that miracle. And he actually sensed that that had occurred in this crush of people. And yet he didn't instigate it. It wasn't being instigated by him at all. It was instigated by an unconverted woman. And he looked around to see who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done to her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace and whole of your plague." Now, that is very clear that faith is involved. It seems to be involved in many of these cases where you find people who believe and trust God, and they come in faith and they pray, and answers do come. Another example, I can... Again, it's to do, almost seems to be to do with character. I know reading the story of Shackleton, which was a phenomenal story when he came back from the South Pole, the odds that he went against, determined to try and save all his men, was indeed phenomenal. And when he got, in fact, into South Georgia, I think it was, and on the wrong side of the island, and then had to climb, I think, about 3 mountain peaks to get to the whaling station on the other side, which had never been climbed before, without any gear. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But he did it, and as they walked, the three of them, there was another one that walked with them. So these type of examples do seem to indicate that when there is a huge desire, a huge amount of faith being exhibited by somebody in a physical way, that God, who is, you know, who fills heaven and earth, does listen to those types of prayers. This one that, in fact, acknowledges when a sparrow falls, he does look upon human beings with a great deal more than any sparrow. So the question really ends, therefore, what's the difference as far as our own dealings with God? Now, people look at scriptures. Let's turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. It says in 1 Peter 5, again being addressed to the church, it says, "Casting all your care upon him," verse 7, "for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Who resists steadfast in the faith." And again, faith is very important. "In the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world." There's quite a similarity between what we go through and what is in fact happening to people outside in the world. A very great similarity between us. But there is an enormous difference between. And the difference really is the same kind of difference as between a cell that is dividing in the womb of its mother, becoming a human being, and other cells in the body. There's a huge difference between the two. They're like chalk and cheese, but they're all cells within the body of the mother. They're just one of them is going to develop into an entirely different individual. And our brethren in the world are going through the same kind of things that we go through in many ways. And this is the problem, that sometimes we get people who should know better within the church, who make comments that quite frankly indicates that they don't really understand, they do not really get it. I'd like to just make just quote something that, again, this letter, that email that came through. There's a minister that said, talks about those that we're living in the world administered by human beings, a majority of whom don't have the Spirit of God at work in them. I do not know how many do. There may be a few, but most people we come into contact with do not have God's Spirit, and they rule over us. So in other words, they're looking at the people out in the world and they're saying, well, these people, as far as we know, you know, most of them don't have the Spirit, but there might be a few that do. Out in other groups, out in other, totally nothing to do with, such as Corrie ten Boom. Now, the fact that God does in fact intervene in certain instances, the fact that certain degrees of faith is in fact exhibited, and there seems to be an almost an automatic cause and effect that God has put into the world in that way, does not mean that somebody is converted. The fact that they go ahead and they have a prayer answered does not mean to say that they are converted. Because, again, a cell can send out a message, if you like, in the body and receive an answer. But it's not the same as a baby being grown that's growing in that body. There's an enormous difference between an ordinary cell in the body and a baby that is grown. And this is the incredible difference. The difference between our dealings with God is that we are becoming the very child and children of God. And we're doing that for an enormous purpose. If we turn over to Revelation 20, just remind ourselves. And this is what, as I say, some people just do not understand, as I quoted from that minister. Many of them don't understand. And go back and listen to Why the First Fruits by Mr. Herbert Armstrong. The huge difference, the why we are called now, is nothing to do with being teacher's pet. It's absolutely nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with the fact that we will have salvation. Salvation is given to us as a prerequisite so that we can accomplish the job that we've been called to do. The reason that we've been called now is because it's part and parcel of the very plan of God. We are no different at all to those out in the world. None. On a human level, in fact, there is one difference, which we'll go and have a look at. But there's no physical difference at all, or spiritual difference at all, between us, except for the spirit that God gives us. And it's coming from God, it's not ours. It's something that God gives us, and then we must grow thereby. But here in Revelation 20, where it talks of, I saw thrones in verse 4, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given to them, and the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness. And it says, and they lived and reigned, at the end of the verse, in verse 4, it says, they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. But the rest of the dead didn't live again until 1,000 years were finished. But this resurrection where they live and reign with Christ 1,000 years, is the first resurrection. It's the resurrection that we have been called to. Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. On such the second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Our role is to be priests. And we will do it as kings also, because we will be reigning. But our role, it says clearly here, is to be priests of God. And the role of a priest was to teach, as it says over in Malachi, if you put it in your notes, Malachi 2:7, that the priest's lips should keep knowledge and they should seek the law at his mouth. That's the purpose of a priest. It is to teach, to go out and teach the people that God is dealing with. Mr. Armstrong, in Mystery of the Ages, I think I read this before, it says, let it be emphasized that the purpose of the church is not merely to give salvation to those called. The church may be called God's teacher's college to prepare rulers and teachers for the kingdom of God. It's for calling predestinated human beings out of this world to be trained for positions of leadership in the world tomorrow, when they will teach and train others. Now that's on page 228 of Mystery of the Ages. But the very purpose, the reason for our calling, is that we might be teachers. Now that means that we have a different relationship with God. It means that although our brethren in the world go through similar problems to us, and we do go through similar problems to them, we have trials and problems. The trials and problems in our case have a different effect because of what we are, because of our calling. Now, we need to be absolutely sure, if we turn over to 1 Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians, and this can be a problem, that we can get big-headed about the fact that we have been called now. And we shouldn't, because there's no difference. Humanly, there is no difference whatsoever between ourselves and the world, apart from this one, which we're just about to read. And it is God's grace, God's free gift to us. Nothing that we have done ourselves. We have been predestined. A certain group of people are predestined to be there as the temple in the future, are predestined to be the teachers It doesn't have to be you, it doesn't have to be me. But we have been called, and having been called, it is a privilege, but it's nothing to do with our goodness. The reason for it, as it says in here, in verse 26 of 1 Corinthians 1, it says, "For now you see your calling, brethren." Here's the reason why we've been called. "That not many wise after the flesh, or many mighty, or many noble are called, but God has deliberately," in other words, "chosen the foolish things of the world." And he's chosen the foolish things to confound the wise. So the reason for it is that in the future, when we will become teachers, when we will be glorified, it's because we are foolish in this world and we're looked upon and despised, that will in fact therefore reduce this wisdom of the people in the world. It says, "And God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things that are mighty, the base of the world, and the things that are despised has God chosen, yes, and things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence." That's the calling that we've been given. And the reason we're called early, the reason why we're called to be teachers, is so that we can in fact fulfill this purpose, so that as teachers we will be there ahead of time. But there's nothing that we have that, if you like, that we can look to and say that God had to call me because I'm so righteous. It's ridiculous. We're just not. We are actually, it's because we're so stupid and so foolish, humanly speaking. That's why we've been called. Because he can actually take something that's stupid and foolish and with his spirit say, "Look, if I can do something with this, there's hope for everybody." That's why. And it really rubs our nose in it a great deal. But that's exactly why we have been called. Because if he can do something with us, he can do it with anybody. And it gives a great encouragement, if you like, to those that will be called later. But there again, it'll also bring them down to size as well, because it is not our righteousness. It has got to be God's righteousness. It's got to be the leadership of that Spirit. The Corrie ten Booms of this world have not been called. They exhibited enormous faith. But the conversion that took place in our life never took place in hers. And it is that conversion. She could not go and become a teacher in the world tomorrow. She doesn't understand about God's law. Do we really understand about God's law? Do we reduce it down to a series of tick points? Because if we do, we don't understand about God's law. There are points within it, but they all have an overall way and an overall direction. It is the very mind of God that we're looking at. And the world has no concept whatsoever about that, and neither do we, except for the teaching that we've been given. And it is, as I pointed out, I think, in the sermon last week, over in Isaiah, in Isaiah 30, verse 21, if you want to put it in your notes, I won't turn there, where it talks about a word behind you saying, "This is the way, walk in it, when you turn to the right and when you turn to the left." It's a principle that we're going to have to apply, and apply and teach, because it can't be just a series of tick points. It's a principle that's got to be applied in all circumstances. Whenever anybody goes right or left, you can see and you know that they're off track. Now, you cannot just go to get your rule book out. It's not a rule book. There are rules there. There are rules that we can use, but that's not what it's at. That the actual way itself is a spiritual, spiritual way. Sometimes you'll even find that some, such as Corrie ten Boom, are better than some of us within the church. It does not mean to say that they're converted. It doesn't mean to say they're converted. And this is what many of the even ministers do not understand. We're not here just to get our own salvation. We're here to become teachers. And there's a certain type and quality that God has got for the teachers at this time, and it is that they are weak of this world, so that it's going to confound the mighty in the future. Now, I hope that's clarified it to some degree, in regard to this question. where does God ever hear the prayers of those outside the church? The answer is yes, he does. It does seem to be linked up to faith to a large degree. That seems to have a great deal to do with it. But as far as we are concerned, we're in a different category altogether. We have a relationship with God, and it's for a purpose. And we've got to make sure we keep our mind firmly rooted on that purpose.